Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So far,
welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for August 12th, 2021. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling feed or on our own dedicated podcast feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you would like to donate to the show, just click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box that says sponsor this podcast and you set up a one-time or recurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Iron Mike Spears, joined alongside my friend and co-host, Case Lowe. And Case, we are now officially in this new era. And how are you doing?
Well, Mike, it always feels good to be right. It always feels good to be able to start the show with a victory lap. And longtime listeners of this program will know. They won't have to go back into the archives and re-listen to anything. They will know off the top of their dome. What have we been saying for weeks now, Mike Spears? We've been saying going into Kobe World and Speedstar Final, Yamato is going to win the Dreamgate belt. And who's going to challenge him at Dangerous Gate 2021, his first defense of the Open the Dreamgate title? Some combination of Kai, Masaki Mochizuki, or Ben K. We've been saying it for months, and my God, Mike Spears, it feels so good to be right.
Right, yeah, I mean, clearly the no ropes lumberjack match would not be enough to finish this feud. I mean, especially with Yamato having the title.
The feud must continue. The feud must continue, and it must continue in a triple threat match with Ben K and Masaki Mochizuki. We've said it before, we'll say it again. This is the direction we knew things were going. And man, I'll tell you what, you take a victory lap like this, Mike, these only come along once in a generation. I'll do one in 5 years when SB Kento is ruling wrestling, but for now, let's just soak in for a moment that we nailed the Dreamgate booking, and it feels really good, Mike.
Absolutely. You know what's a nice little maybe victory sprint we have? You know, Kota Minoru, of course he's just going to be off doing nothing. I mean, why wouldn't he? I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff that needs to go on with Kai and Benkei and Masaki Mochizuki. I mean, that he'll have his time in the future, but for right now, we need to have this triple threat match decide the first Dreamgate challenger in the post-Masato Yoshino era.
Well, it's not like Kota Minoru beat Masaki Mochizuki in a singles match or anything, so he really has no leg to stand on when it comes to challenging for the Dreamgate belt.
And it's not like he has a direct pinfall over the current Open the Dreamgate champion. I mean,
if he had beaten, hypothetically, of course, Yamato, and then a month later, pinned Masaki Mochizuki clean, 2 years after his debut, to put a bow on that story, and then beat Eita on the biggest show of the year, I would say, yeah, that guy feels like he deserves an Open the Dream Gate championship shot. I actually think it should be him, and I think that would be a bold statement for Dragon Gate to make in a post-Masato Yoshino era. But obviously that did not happen. He didn't beat Yamato, Mochizuki, or Eita in direct succession. So it's a moot point. Of course, he will be off in an 8-man tag, and that'll be the end of it.
Right, yeah. I mean, just as planned. Just as planned.
It's what we've been talking about. And like I said, it feels good to be right.
So, weird first week post Masato Yoshino. Just put a bow on this. But we have a full week of shows to talk about. They were in Osaka on August 9th. Then they had their first Korakuen of the Gate of Adventure series on the 11th. That's part of the reason why it's a Korakuen week. We like to wait until we can cover Korakuen here. And we've got a lot of topics, Case, that we're going to go over this week. The Brave Gate scene, the Dream Gate scene, the Dragon Gate future, the new general manager, Ryo Saito. So, Case, pick your choice. How do you want to start off this week's show?
I think we could do two birds with one stone here, because I want to start with what I feel like is the hottest topic in Dragon Gate right now, and it's the first time in many, many years we've been able to say this, but the Open the Brave Gate scene, to me, is the thing to talk about this week. SB Kento was your Open the Brave Gate champion. I actually did correctly predict that he would beat Kagetora in Nagoya last weekend. Then the day after that, Keisuke Okuda challenged him for the Open the Brave Gate championship. Chaos ensued, and we now have no Open the Brave Gate champion.
Hey, first week on the job, Ryo Saito's doing fine. He's doing a great job. He's not flustered at all. He's not, he has all the clothes he needs. He's timing our things out well. He's doing fine. But yeah, this Open the Brave Gate scene, it started at going into Kobe World and Speedstar Final. Very stable scene. Keisuke Okuda just had to get through Genki Horiguchi, then Kagetora. That didn't happen. So we've had three different champions on three shows, and now it is vacant. What is the date for the Osaka 2 show in September, Chris? Do you have it all in front of you right now?
I thought I did, and I do not, but I can get it real quick, because there's a trivia. What's the date there?
September 11th, 2021.
September 11th, 2021, and that will be headlined by Okuda versus SB Kento for the now vacant Open the Brave Gate Championship. I want to break this feud down piece by piece for just a second, because I think you can attest to this too. This got some buzz. At least in our bubble, there were people asking us about the Brave Gate scene and specifically what happened on this Osaka show that, you know, follow the promotion to some extent, but aren't necessarily diving in to your Osaka number twos or your Kobe Sambo Halls or your Fukuoka shows. They're Korakuen viewers, they're Big Five viewers, and that's their level of interest in the company. I felt like a lot of eyes were on this Brave Gate scene and this Okuda SB Kento match in particular, and I just want to make sure that everything that happened here has been digested, because this is some of my favorite storytelling in wrestling in a very long time. I'm not saying it's the best, but personally, what I enjoy in wrestling, this story is delivering with everything I like. So Kagetora wins the belt from Horiguchi at Speedstar Final on August 1st. August 8th, he goes in and SB Kento challenges him. SB Kento wins and then gets into a super heated confrontation with Keisuke Okuda. Ryo Saito, who is the new GM, as Mike just alluded to, he says, this is great. They have so much heat between them. Let's keep that heat going. Let's put them in the opening match tomorrow, Osaka number two, Open the Brave Gate Championship. The match, which I would like to talk about in just a second, the match goes 5 minutes. It ends in a double disqualification after Keisuke Okuda, rather, attacks the referee, and per Open the Brave Gate rules for a while now, if there is a no contest, the belt is vacated and we have some form to crown a new champion. The you know, at times it's been a Brave Gate tournament. At times a Dr. Muscle has appeared and resurrected the title. Here, it's going to be a rematch next month. Ryo Saito, the new GM, comes out and says he admits he made a mistake. He's the new GM. He's new to this job. He thought, hey, wouldn't it be great to keep this heat going and put them in the opening match? He now realizes it was too much heat and that he made a mistake, so he's going to give them a month to cool off. Next month, September 11th, 2021, in Osaka, Japan, headlining Osaka number 2 Bodymaker Coliseum, it's the Open the Brave Gate title match, Keisuke Okuda versus SB Kento. I think this has been perfectly executed.
And it's something that really, when first SB Kento got this match, this title match, I was like, I think SB Kento is kind of above this at this point. Like, he is someone that, I mean, the supernova, I mean, there's not enough plaudits you could throw towards him for his first 2 years of wrestling, but he's exactly what the Brave Gate kind of needs after the Okuda title reign, his first title reign, at least, just kind of petered out. Yes, there were some solid matches with UT and Kagetora, but there was just a lot of just kind of people who are not, I mean, Giki Horiguchi, bless his heart, he's not going to have a Keisuke Okuda bantam match. However, SB Kento, he is more than willing to. And the way that they've built this from having the belt being a hot potato for a week and then looking like it could be stable, because you look at SB Kento, you're like, all right, the belt's going to stick on a while. But then Keisuke Okuda, the angriest man alive, is just not happy and challenging and going from there. And the way that they've built this up, even on the Korkin show, it's provided a lot of life and a division in the company that I was kind of a little down on going into the doubleheader at Kobe World Kenan Hall. But now it's an interesting thing. It gives something for SB Kento to do. It seems like that this is the station for Keisuke Okuda right now. And, you know, just the way that they've kind of overall, the storyline is that Ryo Saito might be in over his head because he's having water and nitroglycerin in the same room and they're exploding at each other. It's great stuff. And the 5 minutes they had and all the interactions they've had since that Brave Gate no contest have been excellent stuff. It's been incredibly exciting and it's really provided life again to a division that kind of needed it, because it just did not seem like that first title reign for Keisuke Okuda ended the way that, or it went through the way that we anticipated.
On a personal level, the hot potato of the Brave Gate belt does not bother me. If we go back to the Toriumon day, so we're looking at roughly 21, 22 years, they've never done this before. They have a real good track record of, at times, maybe not valuing titles to their most extent, but at the very least, respecting these titles. I don't mind a secondary title jumping around like this once, every 20 years. I'm going to allow it. I'm going to give this the thumbs up. Doesn't bother me there. And you said it right there. You know, Genki Horiguchi could not have a Keisuke Okuda match, but SB Kento, and I have raved about him since he debuted at the end of 2019. I said this guy could be the next Yamato. And one of the interesting aspects of Yamato's game, especially early in his career, was how well he performed on the mat. Yamato has an MMA background. To my knowledge, SB Kento does not. But holy shit, did SB Kento show me something new in this match. Because even on the biggest stage, even if you look at that Unit Disbands RED versus Toriumon Generation match from December of last year, SB Kento was the top heel in that match. He's the man that ran everything. But his viciousness was done with a grin. He was taking glee almost in the punishment he was dishing out on the Toriumon Generation. This was a whole new side of him that we have not seen yet. This was a different SB Kento than the man that feuded with Dragon Kid for all those months. He was head down, focused. He needs a mouthpiece if he doesn't have one. Fight starter with Keisuke Okuda. And what Jay said on this podcast a few weeks ago when we had him on, and if you haven't listened to our interview with Jay, I highly recommend going back and do it. If you're listening to this show, guess what? It's in the same podcast feed. But Jay said something that shook me to my core, because I've speculated for a few months now about SB Kento, as crazy as it sounds, being a year and a half into his career, possibly being in the Dreamgate picture, not necessarily saying he's going to win the belt, but saying, you know, he could realistically challenge for the Dreamgate belt. And Jay said if he was 3 inches taller, he'd be champion already. Obviously, that's pure speculation, but when he said that, it was every bit of confirmation I needed that SB Kento is over in Japan. He's over with me. He's the most talented prospect in wrestling. He has the brightest future in anyone in wrestling under the age of 25 right now. And think of the ground that covers. And he is showing yet another aspect of his game with Keisuke Okuda. It's unbelievable, Mike. There's nothing he can't do. There's no hurdle that he hasn't been able to clear. And he's a year and a half into his career.
And on top of all that, the one hole in his game, like if we were going to say like what tools you need to be an ace in Dragon Gate, it is presence, it is charisma. Two different things. Presence and charisma are two different things. Microphone skills, emotion, and ring work. The ring work was the thing that was not a 80 grade. If we were going to fully do the whole baseball five tools thing, 80, yes. For people who don't follow baseball, it is weird. The highest score you get to someone's skill is an 80, but it works on standard deviations. So, but I think that Keisuke Okuda is the perfect person in this scenario for him, because what we saw out of him at Edeon 2 and what we've seen in the interactions there, it's kind of what he needs, is someone to kind of push him into the viciousness and kind of get him out of like being competent, but you know, not amazing, into like taking that step up here. Because this 5-minute match was just like pull apart, just vicious brawling. And it wasn't just like having a Keisuke Okuda match. It was seeing this new dimension of SB Kento that really elevates that tool of ring work to a level that it needs to be. And that was like the next step for him. So as someone who still kind of thinks that Brave Gate, you know, SB Kento, this guy was in the final four of King of Gate. If it wasn't for Hip Hop Kakuta landing the hand of guard, the hand of God, he would have clean swept the people that have been around since the Toriumon age. But he was able to step in here and do it. And I think that even though that this is kind of a pit stop for him towards his ultimate goal, I think this is going to benefit him immeasurably in the future.
This match, this opening match that went to a no contest, it felt hot. It felt like a big deal. It's really hard to quantify this stuff. This might be an eye roll inducing statement to some people, and I cannot knock them. If you roll your eyes at this, I get it. I understand that we're 18 months into clap crowds here, and this is how you have to quantify things. But I do think this building specifically, used to be Bodymaker Coliseum, now it's Edeon, the number 2 Osaka Arena, I think this has been the hottest Dragon Gate clap crowds there has been. There's no possible way to compare what we're getting in Osaka to a real actual crowd, but I do think compared to Fukuoka and Korakuen Hall and the big venues they've run, and even Sambo Hall in their home base in Kobe, I think the Osaka crowds have consistently been the most engaged in the product, these shows in Osaka number 2. This match felt big, and I think the match next month is going to feel like a huge deal. And Mike, I want to throw a trivia question at you, one that I'll be really, really impressed and also slightly disappointed, just because it will mean that we spend far too much time with Dragon Gate occupying our brains if you're able to get this right.
Okay.
But think about the Open the Brave Gate Championship. Think about Osaka Edeon number 2, and not counting Champion Gate matches, because every year in March, Dragon Gate runs Champion Gate 2 nights. They put a Brave Gate match and a Triangle Gate match on one night, a Dream Gate match and a Twin Gate match on the other night. The last time the Open the Brave Gate Championship was defended in this building on a non-Champion Gate show, do you know when it was?
I think it was Tozawa's Brave Gate run, the quote-unquote eternal Brave Gate run in 2015.
That was my thought as well, but if you recall, that was Champion Gate in Osaka 2015. That was Tozawa versus KZ, and then Uha Nation's Farewell versus BB Hulk the next night. Mike, the last time the Open the Brave Gate Championship was defended in the smaller Osaka building was November 19th, 2011. This is on a non-Champion Gate show. It was November 19th, 2011, Ricochet versus Pac. That is how long it's been since this building has had an out of characteristic, not calendar scheduled, Open the Brave Gate Championship match. It's been 10 years, And SB Kento is the right man for the job. Just for a fun purpose, the last time a title was defended in this building on a non-champion gate show was 2017. It was July of 2017, a triangle gate match with Shingo L. Lindemann and Takashi Yoshida winning the triangle gate belts from Ben K, Big R, Shimizu, and Naruki Doi. Okay, this building is consistently a great audience for Dragon Gate. They always draw a nice house here. And they realistically have not been given the big stuff outside of Champion Gate for many, many years now. It's been 10 years since a non-Champion Gate Brave Gate match took place in this building. It was Ricochet versus Pac then. It's SB Kento versus Kaisuke Okuda now. I am locked in on this feud.
And it's something that I think coming out of it, they'll decide the 43rd Open the Brave Gate champion on September 11th. I'm kind of talking myself into the idea that if they're going to be willing to headline one of their bigger cities with this Brave Gate match for the first time in 10 years to do so, and the first time that they've been doing this here, I think it's kind of like a smart thing, because now you're kind of testing the waters on with SB Kento up top. You know, is that unrealistic for me to say that it's like, oh, now you could go say like, oh, yeah, we could go have one of the triple shot in December in Hokkaido. And one of those nights could be SB Kento versus KZ for the Brave Gate.
No, not unreasonable at all. It's the same logic I used with him winning the belt in Nagoya. They're not going to beat him in a title match at his hometown at this point in his career. And I don't think they're going to have him lose a headlining match that will end up becoming his first extended singles title run. At this point, things could change. At this point, all of my chips are going towards SB Kento winning that match. I would be disappointed just from a booking standpoint with the way Dragon Gate does things. I would be disappointed if they went back to Okuda. And I also just think the momentum and everything else is pointed in SB Kento's direction.
Oh, I'm totally with you here. So, Case, we're talking about the future. And unless you have any other Brave Gate thoughts, I think it's a good time to transition here. But we're talking about the future here. And the future will be ahead of us, and it'll be in front of us, as we will have the first official debuts of the 2021 Dragon Gate rookie class at Dangerous Gate, as the Ihashi brothers, Riki and Ishin, will go up against Don Fuji and Yasushi Kanda. And it's something that, again, the episode with Jay from a few weeks back, we talked a little bit about this, but it's really fascinating because of the other elements that are at play, in my opinion, with the Ihashi brothers.
Yeah, Jay covered this to a tremendous degree, and it was maybe, you know, Jay dropped a lot of knowledge in that interview, and I thought his point about second generation wrestlers, Strong Machine Jay, or now the Ihashi brothers, being able to keep their father's sponsorships and the revenue that can bring to them was a very, very interesting point. And this is something new for the Dragon system. We've seen it with Strong Machine Jay, and we'll talk about him a little bit later on in this episode as he returned in Korakuen Hall this past week, you know. But we've seen the iteration of the Dragon from Ultimo Dragon to Dragon Kid to Dragon Daya. But this is a first. The second generation wrestlers hitting Dragon Gate. I'm very, very excited for their debut match in September.
And it's not just a first in Dragon Gate. They really are building this as, this is, in Japan, the first ever what they're calling thoroughbred pro wrestlers, because it's not just the fact that their father, Koji Ishinriki, was a pro wrestler and a sumo. It's the fact that their mother as well, Utako Hozumi, who was an LLPW, did as well. So it's the first time in Japan, at least that's how they're building it, the first time that we are seeing sons who are, that both their parents are pro wrestlers, and also Ishin and Riki's brother is a pro wrestler. And Koji Ishinriki, he made it pretty far into sumo. Like, he was not top level sumo, but he was the one right below it. So it's not just pro wrestling sponsorship money. It's also possibly also sumo sponsorship money, which is a completely different ball game we're talking about at that point. And it's exciting. And it's something that the future project has been going on now since December of last year, and we're starting to see this here, and now they're bringing them out of Kobe. Originally it was just in Kobe, but now they're starting to bring everyone around here, and we're probably going to be seeing a bunch of official debut matches. And the fact that they're putting the Ihashi brothers debuting at Dangerous Gate, that just underline it a couple times and an exclamation point, because that is something that is utterly remarkable. I mean, talk about how SB Kento's rise has been. SB Kento was in the pre-show match as Kenta Kobune last year at Dangerous Gate.
Yeah, I'm really excited about these two kids just because it's something different. You know, you think about all of these successful debuts that Dragon Gate has had, not only in the past few years, but this is something they've been known for, is guys hitting the ground running and being, you know, immediate successes a lot of the time in Dragon Gate. I think we have to reevaluate the way we look at these rookies, where so many of them come out strong. And then you have to look at not months 1, 2, and 3, but months 4, 5, and 6, that very accelerated sophomore slump that sometimes Dragon Gate wrestlers fall into, to really evaluate them. And if they come out of that, great, they'll be successful. If they don't, you know, maybe they become a Hyo type, a Kotoka type, guys that are perpetually on the undercard. But the Ihashi brothers are very, very exciting to me. They are the premier athletes in this future class. If you've seen any of the Dragon Gate future matches that are on the Dragon Gate network, and they're all there, these are probably the guys you've seen, because they were the guys that debuted in this class. And I think this whole deal is fascinating. We have an article up on the Open the Voice Gate Twitter, at Open Voice Gate. It links you to a Tokyo Sports article, which is obviously in Japanese, but with any web translator, you can quickly translate it and make out what they're saying. Riki Ihashi aspires to be like Gran Hamada. And if you have ever listened to this podcast, you know that is a good way for me to immediately respect you. I'm into these kids. I'm into their looks, because Riki Ihashi, God bless him, he is an ugly, ugly man in the context of the Dragon system. Now, walking around the streets of Kobe, walking around the streets of Fukuoka, I'm sure he's a fine gentleman. But this is Dragon Gate. This is where male models go to wrestle. And in the context of this promotion, he is one ugly motherfucker. And I think that is going to work to his advantage throughout his entire career.
You know who he kind of reminds me of in that way, and they couldn't put the mask on him faster? Shun.
This is very true. Unfortunately, 2016 Dragon Gate is not on the Dragon Gate network, because I would like to revisit some of that stuff at some point of Shun Watanabe. For newer fans might not even realize, you know, whereas Dragon Daya came in with this really hype debut and he was Dragon Daya from the start of his career, Shun Skywalker, fellow masked wrestler, did not debut masked. He debuted as Shun Watanabe next to Hyo Watanabe, which was incredibly confusing for a few months. And it wasn't until a few months into his career that Shun put on the mask. And, you know, that gear was rough from the start, but it was like, hey, at least we don't have to look at his face. This seems like a positive.
Yeah, and it's something that there's one thing that and this is just an aside. Please put up information about the Dragon Gate future kids, please. It is impossible to kind of determine like which one is which, because they don't have that. They don't get screen bugs when they come out, because it's exhibition matches. They don't list them in the results, and you have to like crawl through certain things, and you have to be able to hear exactly right who is who and what situation there. But yeah, it's something that like I started calling the class of 2016 W2N just because it made my life a whole lot easier. But it'll be interesting to see. Like, I feel like very clearly they're going to run them as a brothers kind of tag team for a little bit, and they should. But it'll be interesting to see. Like, obviously they're going to capitalize on the fact that they are built as Japanese pro wrestling's first ever thoroughbreds. But it'll be interesting to see like how they position them like past that, because they've had a very distinctive way of doing things before 2016, and then 2016 pretty much the present. You kind of are debuted fully formed, especially for like Dragon Daya, Strong Machine J, and others on the roster, but you don't get the sense with the futures that they are going to continue doing that as well. But please just like put their names and the colors of their tights in the results, please. It drives me insane trying to look for these things where my notebook, I've crossed out names so many times for the futures matches just because we don't have those.
Well, and to his credit, Jay has been doing a better job of identifying them, and he for both the Osaka show and then the Korakuen show, I was able to tell who everybody was. So for those that don't know, on the Osaka show from August 9th, we had a future match with Riki Ihashi and Takuma Fujiwara. And then on the Korakuen show, we had the other Ihashi brother, Ishin Ihashi. He wrestled Takumi Hayakawa. In those futures matches, they were both 5-minute exhibitions. There is another kid that has debuted on Future. His name is Ryu Fuda, and he has at least one match on the network, maybe two. And Mike, am I making this number of 6 up in my head, or is there another Future kid that we haven't seen yet?
There is. I remember seeing him. I don't have my old notebook ahead of, in front of me, but I do remember seeing another Futures kid in at least 2020, maybe. I mean, like the problem about this was that the Futures project was originally only Kobe Sambo Hall related, and they would put them up distinctly separate from it. So this is like the first time that they actually are a part of the full show feed. So it's something that, like, yeah, no, there's 6, and there's, I'm trying to remember the number that I heard that combined with the Futures kids, I think that the number that I've heard thrown around is somewhere between a dozen and 15 right now.
Yeah, I don't know why I have 6 Future kids in my mind, but I feel like that's something that somebody told me at some point. So that's the number that I've been running with in my head. It's hard to analyze these matches. For a while, when the Future Project first launched, we were talking about them on the network, and those matches were really more shooty, grapply style, whereas the matches here in Osaka and the match at Korakuen were just your classic young boy style. They were very recognizable in what they were doing, very basic, lots of fire. I will say, I thought everybody showed their worth. I think on the Osaka show, you know, like I said, Riki Ihashi has a very distinct face, is certainly one way of saying it. I think that is going to do him wonders in this company, whereas his opponent that night, who was Takuma Fujiwara, I think he's very handsome. I think he's very expressive. I think he's very charismatic. He jumped off the screen for me. I liked the work that he did there. And then on the Korakuen show, you have Ishin Ihashi, who comes across like a big dude. I don't know how big he actually is. I don't know any of his measurements, but he carries himself like a big dude. And then you have Hayakawa, who is just this spunky shit kicker who is going to be a thorn in the side of everybody on this roster for years to come.
Hayakawa is my guy. Like
that is incredibly on brand. If you know Mike Spears, you could point to Hayakawa as soon as he did that running corner drop kick in his future match at Corgan Hall. Mike Spears clicked his pen and said, "That's my guy. I'm writing this in the notebook right now."
Yeah. He's the one that has what, at least in the South, what we call the chili bowl haircut. I don't know what y'all call it up in the plains.
That's not a northern phrase, my friend. We don't say that.
Yeah. He has a bowl cut. He has a bowl cut haircut. But yeah, no, it's called chili bowl. But yeah, no, it's really exciting. And it's something that you look at. I was doing a list of this. You look at who all they've debuted since basically this 2016 class. And you look up and down the roster, and Sora Fujikawa is on his way back. And it's just like insane. Like there's a very big disparity kind of when you watch these shows of, oh, wow, these kids. And you can even include like Eita in this, because Eita hasn't turned 30 yet. So you have like all these wrestlers that are under the age of 30. And then I'm saying this like, I'm saying this, but I don't mean it's not a demeaning whatsoever. Then you have the Torimon grandpas. And it's just one of those things that's a very interesting time, because there's such like a disparity going on here that I find very interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to watch the Ihashi brothers debut match. They're debuting against Fuji, which seems, you know, given their association with sumo, a natural pairing there. And then Yasushi Kanda, who people might not remember, but when Dragon Daya debuted, he wrestled in the match with Shuji Kondo. It was Daya and Dragon Kid against Eita and Kanda. Kanda then representing RED. Thankfully, he is out of that unit now. So they clearly have some sort of trust in Kanda to rein these kids in during their debuts. And it's, you know, a real dichotomy. I mean, we saw it, not to jump ahead, but even in the Korakuen Hall main event, and I mentioned this in my written review over at voicesofwrestling.com, that was the classic Dragon Gate match. 4 teams, 3 men, elimination style. That is the Dragon system. But that was a match that wasn't carried by Yamato. It wasn't carried by Susumu Yokosuka. It was carried by Espy Kento and by Jason Lee and by the younger guys on the roster. And it is clear now just how much youth and how much talent is there. It's something we've obviously harped on, but something about having Yoshino away from the picture, even for a week or two, you take a step back and go, oh my God, this is a young roster, and these are guys that are hungry. They are looking to make their generational stories now, and for the most part, I think they're doing it very successfully.
And it's something that, I mean, we're still on the heels of the retirement of the biggest star in the history of the Dragon system, so you kind of have to, and I think that this is one of those really fun times that is going to be interesting to see how the next few years go, and then looking back in hindsight and talking more about it. And our last big topic that we had, Case, that we really wanted to get into was the Dreamgate scene, as we now have set up for the September Korakuen that the first title match will be happening at that Dangerous Gate show, but at Korakuen in September, as I'm pulling up the date for it, that Korakuen on September 8th is a three-way Dream Key number one contenders match between Misaki Mochizuki, Benkei, and Kai. The winner faces off against Yamato at Dangerous Gate on the 20th of that month.
This is the only time in this discussion that I will mention Coach Minora, but I had this thought as I was watching it live, and then I saw a native fan, someone in Japan, tweet out the same thing, which is, why not add Coach Minora to this match and make it a Dream Key hunting match, which, Mike, you can explain as you are the king of the Dragon Gate gimmick match.
All right, so this is something that we've not had. I'm trying to think when the last Dream Key hunting match we had.
It's 2013, I think. And well,
yeah.
Did they do one when Ultimo returned?
No, they did something that was similar to it to decide the entrance in the cage.
Gotcha. Yeah. No, but the 2013 one that T-Hawk won,
right,
it, off the top of the brain, that's the last one that happened.
Yeah, so the Dream Key hunting match, the idea is that behind one of the turnbuckles is a key. You're able to undo a turnbuckle pad, but you're only able to undo three turnbuckle pads. And if you do not get the key within your three turnbuckle pads, then you are eliminated from the match, and you are not, you will still wrestle in the match, but you cannot undo any more turnbuckle pads. But it traditionally was a four-way match, and the native fan there, like, that was kind of a thing that, like, it's a match type that does not get brought up very often. Like, between, like, 2013, I think, like, the one you had to go before that might be like 2008 or 2009. It was something they really did a lot in 04 through 2009, and then they kind of dropped except for 2013.
Yeah, had you thrown Minora into the fray and just done that match, Minora could have won or lost, Kai could have won for all I cared, at least then I think you fill in the logic gap that is there. But instead you have this bizarre three-way match, and I would like to know from you, we're a month away from this show happening, a lot can change, we can learn some stuff throughout the Gate of Adventure in the month of August, but give me your percentages of Kai, Mochizuki, and Benkei, who is going to be challenging Yamato for the Dreamgate belt?
This is tough because I was like thinking about it, and you can make the argument for all three of them. I do have to say at this point, I think Mochizuki is the underdog a little bit, and I think Kai is the favorite. I think that you're probably talking 40%. To Kai, 35 to Benkei, and then 25 to Mochizuki. What's your percentages so far?
We differ a little bit. I'm at 25 for Benkei, 25 for Mochizuki, and 50 for Kai. And unfortunately, Mike, I think I went full galaxy brain, and I'm not even saying this is the favorite. I don't think this is going to happen. But I had something click in my mind as it was announced, as this scene, and we'll call it a scene, was unfolding in front of me, and I can't totally erase this thought from my mind. I can't say that it's foolish, but stick with me here, and if you disagree completely, shoot me down. Shoot me down out of the sky and let me crash and burn, because I don't want this to be the case. But Dangerous Gate 2021, Yamato versus Kai in an Open the Dreamgate Championship match, but instead of a no rope match, they do some sort of barbed wire rope match gimmick.
I just think the fans will completely reject it. They hated when Shingo brought it in, and they're kind of okay with Eita having barbed wire, but I just don't know if you do that there. I don't think the native fans would go for that enough to go for it.
I agree with you. I don't want it to happen, but Kai does have a history of doing barbed wire matches. He's been in three of them, notably one in 2017 where he teamed with Onita and Shingo in the same match, and they wrestled Fujita, Kendo Kushin, and Nozawa Rongai. You'll never guess, but that was an Atsushi Onita produce show. I know you couldn't tell from an exploding barbed wire match that had Nozawa in it, but yes, that was an Onita produce show. I just can't shake the thought. I don't think it's the most likely outcome, but I can't rule it out, and I certainly can't rule out Kai versus Yamato headlining one of the big five shows, which, look, I've thrown roses at Kai in the past. I think he's played a lot of his role very, very well. I loved the no-rope match, but on paper, I am dreading Yamato versus Kai possibly headlining a big five pay-per-view.
Yeah, it's just something that I was done with this. I mean, I was done with the storyline months ago. So, the fact that we're immediately going back to that, well, just does not enthuse me. I think business-wise, it makes sense. Yamato versus Kai, you're doing it at Oda City. It makes sense. And even, there at Oda City, where that is kind of the show where Dragon Gate brings out the weapons. So that's another point in your barbed wire match idea, because that's where Shingo brought out the barbed wire bat. That's where Eita always has the barbed wire board. It is at Oda City. So it makes sense. I'm just not very enthused about it, Case, to be quite honest.
While we're in this ballpark, let me make a brief aside.
This very unhappy ballpark.
It's not the Field of Dreams, I'll tell you that much. But I mentioned after the no-rope match that I didn't expect Kai to go anywhere, but I really wish that would have been his final appearance, because it would have been the perfect opportunity to write him off. It would have been 3 years in the company. He would have done his job and he would have done it well, and we could have washed our hands with Kai right there. Well, what happened a few days ago was that Kazuma Sakamoto showed up in Glee, and we talked about this on the Open the Voice Gate account a little bit, but we have not talked about it with one another. What do you make of this?
I mean, he's a freelancer. And a
noted freelancer, if you listen to our interview with Jay.
Yeah. You notice that in the match, there's no one in Strong Hearts in it. So I just think he's taking other dates. I mean, he's taking other dates while in COVID, too. He was regularly participating in NOAH up until mid last year. So does not surprise me too much. It'll be interesting to see how things continue, if this is something that they brought him in because he's someone that can sell tickets and can handle that sort of thing, or if he's sticking around. And I think the big kind of tell about that is if he gets engaged with Strong Hearts in any fashion.
The thing to note, and I do think this is important, is that if you look at the Dragon Gate website, gaiora.co.jp/DragonGate, they update their roster page meticulously, and Kazuma debuted in Gleet. The next day, Masato Yoshino's profile was pulled from the website, and Kazuma's was still there. If you look at Kazuma's social media, he is constantly retweeting Dragon Gate things. Now, he's also retweeting World of Sport GIFs and ECW montages and whatever else, because Kazuma Sakamoto loves the wrestling. But
a great account
still
to follow. A great account to follow.
Great account. Honestly, more people should post like Kazuma Sakamoto. It would make Twitter a much better place. But he is still showing some affiliation with the company. He has not been removed. His profile has not been removed from the company website. And I do think that's relevant because, like I said, they update that page constantly with new renders. Whenever there's a new unit, they're put up there immediately. And Yoshino's profile is already gone. So Kazuma's still there. I noticed when the Gate of Adventure cards were announced that he wasn't anywhere to be found, I didn't think much of it. The next day he shows up in Gleet, I thought, maybe you should have thought more of it, but he's still there for now, and I hope he comes back because, what can I say? I enjoy some Kazuma Sakamoto.
And it's something worth noting that Dragon Gate does try to run, or it did at one point try to run its own like self-contained bubble. So when Mochizuki was doing all the Noah stuff, he would kind of stay in Noah, and that was it. So I think like the big tell to me would be, one, as I mentioned, if he starts doing things with strong hearts, I think that's a very kind of glaring thing that he might be moving on. And two, if after whatever he does in Gleet, if he's not on, I forget what the tour is after Gate of Adventure. Gate of Adventure is always one that sticks out because it's traditionally the Summer Adventure
Stormgate. I believe it's Stormgate.
Yeah, yeah. If the Stormgate cards come out and he's still off of it and he's still doing Gleet shows, then I would be interested to see. Then I think we could be talking about Kazuma's time in Dragon Gate coming to a close for right now.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Have you seen, speaking of Mochizuki and Noah, have you seen the lineups for the N1 victory this year?
No, I have not. Please, please educate me on this. Case, you know, I watch Dragon Gate, I watch All Elite Wrestling, and then I pick and choose from there. So I do not keep great tabs on Nosawa Produce, the major promotion right now.
Look, as you know, there's no promotion I hate more than Pro Wrestling Noah, and that's not even because they're bad. That's just because they're annoying, because they could be good and they choose to be bad. They choose violence every single morning. But they threw old Case a bone here with the B block of the N1 Victory Tour. There's four guys in the block. It's Mochizuki versus Daiki Inaba, who's a guy that I really like. It's Mochizuki, it's Inaba, it's Kano, and then it was supposed to be Murakami, but I believe he just came down with some sort of illness. Did you see anything about this? I would honestly hate to spread like false information about Murakami, but I think he just came down with something.
Don't get the Murakami heads coming after us. I don't want to deal with big mouth loud truthers.
I had hardcore Noah fans come at me for a tweet this week. I made me laugh, but I'm trying to look this up quickly because I thought I read somewhere today that, yeah, Murakami is out due to some sort of nerve condition. I cannot pronounce the word in front of nerve condition. Mike, I'm going to spell this out for you. You can read it for me. S-C-I-A-T-I-C.
Sciatic.
Sciatic. Okay. Now, I don't know what that means. I hear nerve condition and I think, oh, that's bad. So I don't know who is going to take Murakami's place in the N1, but I do know that we're getting Mochizuki versus Inaba, and then in Cork and Hall, September 26th, Kano versus Mochizuki, and that I am into. So thank you, Noah. The A block looks like shit. The D block looks like shit. I can gladly ignore those, but Block C has Nakajima, Kotaro Suzuki and Masato Tanaka, and Block B has Inaba, Kano, and Mochizuki, and those are thumbs up from your old pal Case Low.
So the sciatic nerve is like near your hips and your ass, and it goes down each of your legs. So that's bad. Yeah. That's rough. Yeah. No, I, I'll I'll seek out the Kano match case. I will seek out the Kano match. I don't know much about this Inaba kid, but Kano, all right.
Inaba's good. He is someone who I'm pretty sure I got the right guy, but I got to do a quick check here to make sure he's the guy that I'm thinking of, because he is someone who, he came up in Wrestle 1 and was one of the few guys there that I really paid attention to, because years ago, I think this was 2015. I'm looking at the card now, and I think this is when this match happened. There was an Otani versus Inaba match in Shinjuku Face that at the time, and Wrestle 1 had existed at this point for like 2 years, and I up until Strongheart showed up, had an active hatred for Wrestle 1 because there was no need for them to exist. But there was an Otani versus Inaba match when Inaba was a young boy, and that was, to me, the best Wrestle 1 match in history up until Shima showed up and absolutely wrecked shit. So he's someone with potential. He's someone that I don't think I've seen any of him in Noah, but I trust him and Mochizuki to have a good match. More importantly, Inaba can take a beating, and that is obviously a good thing when you're in the ring with Mochizuki.
And Kano, to be honest. I mean, Kano's a very angry young man. So good luck, Inaba. You have a fun tournament ahead of you.
Yeah, no, it's again, we were talking about him getting stretched by Otani 5 years ago, and really nothing has changed. Like, he's in the same spot.
Well, instead of being stretched, you're getting kicked in the face and punched in the face. So, I mean, I think I would take the Otani stuff rather than kicks from Kano and Misaki Mochizuki, to be quite honest. So, I would say it's a downgrade.
We could have had Kano and Dragon Gate. If he just would have migrated from Michinoku to Dragon Gate instead of Noah, I feel like his career would be in a much better spot. Because look, this is not the podcast to break down pro wrestling Noah booking. The moral of the story is that Noah's booking is terrible, has been terrible, and will always be terrible. But there's some good stuff in the B block there, and I mentioned it because I'm a Saki Mochizuki, so we stayed on topic.
There we go. And the last topic I wanted to bring up is the first week of Ryo Saito's tenure of general manager. We both kind of, when we saw this happen, it's like, all right, this makes sense for like what's happening here. And the way I'm interested to hear your opinion on how they're playing it, because I'm a big fan of way over his head Sairio right now.
I like it. Here's what I don't want. Let me get the negative out of the way first. Ryo Saito walks a real fine line with me, very similar to Orange Cassidy, where when Orange Cassidy delivers, I am madly entertained by it. The issue is that he delivers maybe 5% of the time. And the other 95%, I'm very annoyed by it. Saito is someone who is going to have to tread lightly. I can't see too much of him. I don't want to see too much of Ryo Saito's face, and I'm afraid I'm going to. But week one on the job, I think he's been really enjoyable. Like I said, I love the way he has been used as the fall man, basically, in Okuda versus SB Kento. I think that has been brilliant. I love that story. I love the way they have brought him into that. I am going to draw the narrative, whether it's fair or not, that if Saito is the matchmaker, that he's the one that brought back the 12-man tag that we saw in Korakuen Hall. I love that. I hope we get more wacky matches. I was just talking about this on the show. I want more Nanawa Falls elimination matches. Give me Captain's Fall elimination matches. Give me weird shit. That is what Drengi did so well for so long, and they've abandoned it. So if Saito's role is giving us more of that, great. This week he didn't annoy me. Next week we'll see.
And one thing he also did was in Korakuen, and what was the kind of the prerequisite comedy match on the show, he wanted to hurry things along because there was a quarantine and he wanted everyone to come out at the same time, everyone introduced at the same time. And then the idea that putting a match with Ichikawa and makes it a really quick match there. You know, he has the logic there. He's working around the constraints of this time. Case, one thing I've started to do, and I'm going to do this as a bit until we forget or stops being interesting. I have an approval rating poll that I'll be doing every week before we start recording. And I'm just asking on Twitter, do you approve of general manager Ryo Saito's week on the job? And in the first week, Case, the approval rating of Sairio as general manager, 89.5% approval. He's doing great. He's doing great right now.
Look, Mike, I'm in a position in my shoot job where I am right now being considered for a promotion that would put me, without revealing too much information, would put me more on the corporate side of things. And as a 22-year-old, it is fucking terrifying. It is a lot of responsibility that I welcome but also did not ask for. One of the things that I have learned, constant communication, always checking in with the people around you, not micromanaging, but just checking in, makes your life a lot easier. So if we can check in with Ryo Saito every week, I think we're fine. My one big concern, I don't think I mentioned this, I think I got lost in thinking about Ryo Saito's face. I will be bummed out if the Open the Owari Gate Championship comes back. I do not need that in current Dragon Gate.
No, and it's not like there's a huge roster you could pull from, even with like the idea of like gag champions like Mr. Nakagawa, you know. It's just that era has passed. Shingo did away with that title belt. Well, let's uphold Shingo's image here.
In a Shingo versus Ryo Saito feud that just about made me stop reviewing Dragon Gate, so please, please keep that belt away from this promotion. I enjoy Mike Spears. I enjoy this podcast. Let's keep the Owari Gate Championship out of the picture.
So those were our big topics that we wanted to talk about today.
Can I throw you one more real quick? Something I've been thinking about this week.
Sure thing.
They didn't wrestle against one another on either of these shows, not in Osaka, not in Tokyo, but they're two guys that, for reasons that will become obvious when I mention them, are attached at the hip, and I thought individually they both had really strong showings this weekend, that being Ben Kay and that being Shun Skywalker. And it's a few months past now. I haven't really thought about the project since we concluded it in early April. But Mike and I, as I'm sure many of you are aware of, alongside our friend Alan Forel, we participated in a Greatest Wrestler Ever project where we ranked what we thought were the 100 greatest wrestlers of all time. All of that information is available on the VIP section of the Pro Wrestling Torch website. Go check it out if you have not. None of the three of us ranked Ben Kay or Shun Skywalker. They're 5 years into their career. I think it would have been foolish to do so. But at this point, Mike, in their careers, 5 years deep, they've both been Open the Dreamgate champion. They've both been in a number of prominent matches and a number of Match of the Year contenders. I don't need a number as to where you think they would be, but if you were making a Greatest Wrestler Ever list today and you had to extend it until you hit either Shun Skywalker or Ben Kay, who do you think has had the better in-ring career up to this point?
Interesting. So you just wanted me to rank them, not slot where I think they would end up being if we extended it out.
No, right now, who has had the better career?
I think at this moment, it's probably Ben Kay, just because, and again, this is no fault of his own, we were robbed of a couple main event big five matches with Shun Skywalker. I think it's Ben Kay right now. And I think Ben Kay has some more tag work that Shun Skywalker doesn't have. I think Ben Kay has more trios work as well. So I think it's Ben Kay at this juncture. Forecasting out, though, if we're going to say like the career, I think in the end, just because of an age disparity and health-wise, I think it'll be Shun Skywalker on top. But at this moment, it is Ben Kay.
I'm going to give the edge to Skywalker. I think because his career has been so erratic, and in a weird way, he's popped up in a lot of different places, and he's constantly changed his... Well, I guess Ben Kay has also constantly changed his look. They're even there. I was going to say that Skywalker changed his look a lot, but Ben Kay's 2020 was a wild, wild ride. I think we forget, just because of how Skywalker is and how he carries himself, that he has been just in a number of ridiculous matches. I always point to the Mochizuki tag team. I was just looking through my 2019 spreadsheet, and I forgot just how good Shun was that year, starting the year with Mochizuki Dojo, ending the year on his own, and then ending the year splitting to Mexico because he was on his own and he had no one there fighting with him. It's really, really an incredible career he's had, and I just feel coming out of Kobe World and Speedstar Final, it just gave me a new appreciation for Shun. He is a phenomenal professional wrestler who I think, because of the way he looks, wearing the mask, and the, you know, just preconceived notion that we have about masked wrestlers being American wrestling fans, I think there is a mental block, and maybe you disagree. You can tell me if you do. I think we are preconceived to think these guys are fun and that they're exciting, but that they're not the best, that we don't consider them to be the top guy. And I think it's a weird thing because we've been conditioned on WWE programming to think that, and we're just now breaking that cycle. But if you look at Shun's resume, there are not a lot of wrestlers that have been better over this past 5 years from 2016 to 2021 than Shun Skywalker. Benkei is close, but I think I would give the edge to Shun.
It's something like you bring up the masks thing, and it's interesting because I feel like that the mask argument is just because of, and this is not the Everything Elite Patreon where I'm going to be talking about the impending downfall of the Performance Center era, but we've been so conditioned over like that 20-year period of WWE being the only game in town that people kind of forget about like Mr. Wrestling number one and Mr. Wrestling number two. They forget about like in Mexico, I mean, it's just tradition there. And then like Rey Mysterio kind of is the one that like really broke through in the way.
And
so,
we were told his entire career that he was too small and not good enough. And even if we know Rey is one of the 10 best wrestlers of all time, the perception of the masked wrestler is just beat into your mind, whether it's fair or not. And that's sort of, I think, one of the hurdles that, again, it's just this weird thing where I don't think anybody's intentionally thinking about Shun in this lesser way. But I do think it is a weird part of wrestling fandom that I have just started to realize, especially coming out of Speed Star Final, where I was like, God, this guy has put in a ridiculous resume, and I don't know if he gets all the credit that he deserves for it.
No. And I think he's someone that, like, again, forecasting out, I think he's going to really ascend, like, up the rankings and would be someone, maybe not in 2026, but in 10 years from now, looking back and be a real top 100 contender. Whereas with Benkei, there's just a lot of things that I feel like would prohibit him making my top 100 in the future.
Yeah, they both have ridiculous careers. I mean, we've known from Benkei's debut match that he was going to be something special. Special, rather. Shun, there was a lot of like, okay, what is this guy? Is he going to kill himself in the ring? Is he going to kill somebody else in the ring? No, he's actually just going to have a dominant world title reign and end with two Match of the Year contenders back-to-back on the two biggest shows in company history.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at what he was doing this week, it's going to be interesting to see where he kind of shakes out over the next few months, because he will get pulled back. I mean, that's just how things operate in Dragon Gate. It's not like an indictment or them like bailing out and saying, no, we're not going to be dealing with Shun Skywalker anymore. But seeing him now team with Kota Minoru at Korakuen, being a part of the four unit exciting series and in Osaka, and also looking ahead and seeing how he's kind of positioned on these upcoming Fukuoka shows, it's going to be interesting to see like how things kind of get fleshed out, because he's opening one of the shows with Kota Minoru at Fukuoka, and he's in the main event of the evening show, but it's also part of the four unit exciting battle series. So it's going to be an interesting fall and winter to kind of track him as well.
Not to go Andrew Rich music of the mat on you, but did you notice at Corken Hall, and I think it was the Twitter user, and boy, will I butcher this pronunciation, but Arum, you know who I'm talking about. If you're on Dragon Gate Twitter at all, you are fully aware of who I'm talking about. I believe she pointed out that in the Skywalker Minoru match, they came out to Kota Minoru's music. Do you make anything of that?
Usually they come out with the person who has the most presence, most president at the moment. So yeah, that's a thing. That's part of the pullback. Kota Minoru is on the winning streak. Kota Minoru at this time is kind of positioned more so booking wise. Like, he's the one on the win streak. He's the climber. And I mean, he was the one who got the win in Osaka. So, I mean, I think that's part of the pullback.
All right, Mike, let's quickly go match by match through Osaka and then through Korakuen Hall. We can fill in the gaps of anything that we didn't already touch on. Is that good with you?
That works for me. So we talked about future. It was Riki Ihashi versus Takuma Fujiwara there. That was a whole lot of fun. And then we had the Bravegate No Contest that we talked about starting off the show. And then we had match two, part of the four-unit exciting battle series. It was natural vibes of Susumu Yokosuka, King Shimizu, Kinki Horiguchi, and Funky Jackie Kamei versus Masquerade of Shun Skywalker, Kota Minoura, Dragon Daya, and Jason Lee. And I really, really, this was a hot match starting off the show here. It was 10 minutes and 38 seconds, Kota Minoura getting the gong on Funky Jackie Kamei.
So Funky Jackie Kamei is not on the Fukuoka shows coming up this weekend on August 15th. And that is a bummer, because if I had the proverbial pencil, Jason Lee and Funky Jackie Kamei better get used to each other, because I think their chemistry is excellent, and I think everything that Jason Lee does well, and listeners of this podcast know that I think he does a lot of things well, I think those are all things that Kamei could bring into his arsenal. The smoothness, the quickness, the agility. Kamei, it's interesting, you know, when he was just under his Turtle Chan gimmick to Kato Kamei, I don't feel like we ever questioned his fluidity in the ring or whether or not he could put certain things together. But since he's gone to Natural Vibes, does it feel like he's taken a step back as a performer?
Yes. Yes. That was something I was going to bring up, that like I'm kind of bothered, because Kamei is mine and Alan Forel's guy out of this class, and he needs consistency. And he has not had consistency since joining Natural Vibes, and being off the Fukuoka shows doesn't help in that regard.
Yeah, yeah, it's a bummer. I would like to see him get more work and appear on more of these cards. For as great as Future is, and I love that we're getting to see these raw exhibition matches, someone like Kamei needs either a Prime Zone or a Nex to just get that consistent work, and it appears that both of those have been done by the wayside. And it's disappointing, because I would like to think that if there were ever more Dragon Gate Nex shows, that they would end up on the network. And I would like to think that Kamei would be a big part of them, but it doesn't appear like that's in the cards anytime soon.
Right. Yeah. It's a bummer, because it just seems like that his injury really derailed him at the point where, I mean, he was supposed to be teaming with UT on that first Fukuoka double shot of the year. Like, they were really going to start like having Young Vibes out in the forefront, and he's just now kind of the erratic lost post of the unit. And it's a real bummer, because the rest of this match, like, I thought like he was fine here, but I thought that this 8-man tag team match was excellent. Like, I went 3 3/4, very close to being a notebook for me. And a lot of that was like seeing Masquerade and Natural Vibes together, getting to see the opening with Shun Skywalker and King Shimizu, which ended with like the nice thing about like Shun Skywalker now being able to like have these matches where he's against guys who, I don't want to say are bigger than him, but are sturdier and can base for him. Like the opening thing with like all of the shoulder tackles leading into to Harris from him, rock. Dragon Daya might be my favorite babyface in peril working today. It just was an absolute blast of a match two, and the start of the, it's not listed as a 4-unit exciting battle, but it was a 4-unit exciting battle happening there. So I really enjoyed this match too, Kay. So what were your thoughts about it overall?
A little lower than you. I was at 3.5. You were at 3 3/4. But yeah, it's exactly what I want. I hope we get in the future less Masquerade versus Natural Vibes matches at match two and more on the business end of the card, because these teams can obviously do great things with one another. And this was merely a scraping the surface of what both teams are capable of.
Yeah, and then we got into match three. This was a tag team match of unaffiliated wrestlers, Don Fuji and Sushi Kanda versus Gamma and Punch Tomonaga. Don Fuji won in 10 minutes and 30 seconds with a super choke slam on Punch Tomonaga.
And this was a match that existed.
Yep. I'm certain this match has happened like 30 times before, and it was exactly what it was there. Probably didn't need to go 10 minutes and 30 seconds. Don't really have any thoughts, in case I'm guessing you don't either. Match four. 6-man tag team match, RED team of BB Hulk, Diamante, and Dia Inferno versus unaffiliated team of Ultimo Dragon, Ryo Saito, and Takashi Yoshida. Dia Inferno won with a Hurricane Rana cutback assisted by BB Hulk on Ryo Saito.
Can I get your vibe check on Dia Inferno right now? What do you think about him not always being paired with Dragon Daya, especially Well, answer that first. I have a follow-up question, though.
I've always been a little bit lower on Inferno than you are, and I think he's fine, and I do like the idea that they play up the gimmick that he doesn't really know as much what to do, though he's kind of figuring out wrestling. It's just one of those things that he's so tied to the hip with Dragon Daya that he always kind of feels a little bit out of place with me when it's not a match against Masquerade or Dragon Daya is involved.
Yeah, it's weird. I feel like they're getting more comfortable with the idea of Daya Inferno. I'm going to use the phrase sticking around, and given who was under that mask, it makes me a little uneasy. I've liked the character since the debut. I think it's only gotten better over time, but that character's there for a purpose, and I would like to see it stick to that purpose.
Yeah, like that's the thing. Like I want the Puestas match, and I enjoy the character Daya Inferno. I think that they've really found ways to reinvigorate this feud after Dragon Daya was injured most of the spring, but there's a purpose here, and I don't like them getting away from the purpose.
Yeah, I would co-sign those thoughts.
The match itself was just kind of there. I mean, it was fine. Like, it was not a bad match. They kept it moving, and they highlighted what they needed to highlight. I thought Inferno in this match actually probably was the star of it. But just, I mean, given who all it was there, this kind of felt like card filler in a way.
Yeah, I like the Inferno stuff. I like anytime Ultimo gets in the ring with Diamante. I look forward to their Dragon Mania 22 mask versus mask match. And, we had a weak middle portion of the show here, but it picked up for the final two matches.
Yes, it did. This was not a part of the four-unit exciting battle, but it was Natural Vibes versus High End and Unaffiliated, so no wonder it didn't. It was the Natural Vibes team of KZ and UT versus Naruki Doi and Benkei. Benkei defeated UT with a Benkei bomb in 12 minutes and 38 seconds. And what was my match of the night? I thought this was exceptional.
I thought this was very good. I don't think it ever flirted with being great for me, but I'm comfortable also calling it the best match in the show. Naruki Doi is an interesting guy right now. I really thought either this show or Corkin Hall, we would get a big angle with Naruki Doi, because as he said since April, you know, he's going to hold off on finding a new unit until after Masato Yoshino retires. Naruki Doi is still one of the biggest stars in the promotion. And I thought they would hit the ground running and make something happen with Doi, whether that's a heel turn, whether that's his own unit. I have no idea where they're going with him, but I thought they would start their direction to that place on these shows, and it did not happen, which I think is very interesting. But what did happen is a very, very good match with Doi and Benkei, the former Maximum pairing, against KZ and UT. Of course, UT delivered in a big spot. Of course, KZ looked good here. I would love it if we saw more direct two-on-two KZ and UT tag matches.
Yeah, I love this tag team. I thought UT was the star here, and UT probably is my favorite wrestler to watch in the ring in Dragon Gate right now. And I thought that UT was so good with Doi here, and then just kind of did a whole lot of things, and just he was being able to kind of stretch things. I thought he had like a great closing stretch, and this crowd, like the Osaka crowds, are the most, with the exception of when people beat up on rookies, like the most excited crowds in Dragon Gate, as you were talking about earlier this show. UT really had the crowd in the palm of his hands, and I thought it was a really fun finishing stretch. And, you know, I would really be interested in what would happen. Like, I don't think we'll get Natural Vibes versus Natural Vibes, but yeah, I want to see KZ and UT stick around. I feel like that those two have good chemistry together.
Completely agree. And then we got a main event that I thought was a pretty hot little affair. Mike, what did you think of this?
I thought it served its purpose. It was the official four-unit exciting battle match of the night. High End versus RED, Yamato, Dragon Kid, Kakator, and Keisuke Okuda versus Kaito Ishida, Kai, Hyo, and SB Kento. Okuda gets the win with the choke sleeper on SB Kento in just under 9 minutes. And I liked how it was very freewheeling and focused on the Brave Gate rivalry here. And I thought that it was all really solid here. And I felt like that this is, like, my big takeaway from this show was that SB Kento took a huge step forward in my mind in ring, because I thought he looked like an absolute star here. And I felt like that really he was the straw that stirred the drink, if you will.
Yeah, I love the rare instance we get a Dragon Gate match like this where it feels really chaotic and really thrown together. This never found its flow, and I think that benefited the match. This was pretty hectic for all, you know, roughly 9 minutes that it existed. It was a larger vehicle for Okuda and SB Kento, as you said, and I like this every once in a while. The two that come to mind, I guess this one was a longer match, it was more formulaic, but the show I reference all the time, January 14th, 2005, which really, to me, is the true beginning of Dragon Gate. Obviously, it's a promotion that launches in August of 2004, but January 2005 is the beginning of Blood Generation in the sort of, oh shit, we're on to something new here, where Doi turns heel in the first match, and then he joins the main event, and it's just a crazy, wild main event to end an all-time great Dragon Gate show. There's also, from 2014, now I want to pull up the match just to get it exactly right, but BB Hulk was the Dreamgate champion, and he had it in his mind that he was going to defend the belt against all of Mad Blanky in sort of a gauntlet-style Dreamgate match, and that did not go well. He was pinned, I believe, by Casey very, very early into the match. And so what did they do? Shima said, well, we can't send the fans home with a 6-minute main event that ended in absolute nonsense. Let's have a member from every unit come out here and team with Hulk. So they had Tozawa and Shima and Susumu and T-Hawk come out to team with Hulk, and they wrestled Mad Blanky in the main event. Very chaotic match, very entertaining. This one didn't live up to those heights, but it was the same sort of idea, and I really like it when they go in that direction.
Yeah, and it's something where, again, Eternal Manager Ryo Saito doing a great job adding these two in the main event. You know, just great first week
killing
on the job.
Killing it.
And that was it for the Osaka Eon 2. This was their first Osaka show that they had since Champion Gate because of the last COVID shutdown, which I didn't realize until I was looking up because I was trying to figure out, like, when was the last time they were in this building? Not since March, but it will be up on the network through the 16th. It's 2 hours. Like, this show breezes by, even like the slower stuff in the middle. I mean, yeah, they did give 10 minutes to a Punch Tominaga match, but I mean, and they played the hits there. I thought this was a really fun show, and actually, I think I liked this show more than I liked the Corkin.
Yeah, Corkin was strange. The main event was great, worth checking out immediately if you have not seen it, even if I didn't like the finish. There was a lot of stuff on the Corkin show that I almost really liked, and then I just didn't. But yeah, it was not the strongest Corkin Hall outing they've had this year. It's a building that they've struggled in. I put a lot of that on the mandates and the restrictions due to COVID, but they haven't knocked it out of the park a ton at Corkin this year, which has been disappointing.
Yeah, yeah. Attendance 635, which I'm going to really keep track of these because it's kind of the big tell on how big of a hit losing Masato Yoshino was. They were selling it out at 715 before it. This was kind of what I was expecting, 635. So not a bad showing. Case, your written review is up on voicesofwrestling.com. We had the future match. It was Takumi Hayakawa versus Ishin Nahashi. And then we had the announcement of the Ahashis debuting at Dangerous Gate that we talked about earlier. And then we opened up the show proper with Bensuke, the high-end team of Benkei and Keisuke Okuda versus BB Hulk and Daya Inferno, where really the story of this match was building off everything in Osaka because SB Kento was at ringside and just really just kind of just being a thorn in high inside the entire match.
Super entertaining opener. I like this. Real strong way to start the show. Benkei looked really, really good here. I just liked what he did. Not a great match, not a very good match, but a solid effort from everybody involved, including SB Kento.
This match must have hit me at a bad time. I did not really care for it. I enjoyed the Okuda stuff with SB Kento. I thought Hulk looked okay, at least for the first few minutes, and it kind of lost its way and kept on going on. And I was like, okay, can we please get this over with at a certain point? So, but Benkei looked strong. Benkei did look strong, and it made sense how strongly he looked given what happened after the main event.
Yeah, very much so.
Match two. We talked about this a little bit when we were talking about Ryo Saito. This was Naruki Doi, Kenichiro Arai, Ryo Saito versus Konamaui Chikawa, Sachi Okoboi, and Yosuke Sanmaria. We had a quick match that was restarted because it was Konamaui Chikawa in it. And for new listeners, the gimmick with Soccer Chikawa, we'll refer to him as Soccer, but his name now is Konamaui Chikawa. He always loses immediately, then asks for a rematch. The rematch went 4 minutes and 29 seconds when Kenichiro Arai reversed a figure four and made Konamaui Chikawa tap out. And my big takeaway from it about this was how funny it was that Jay immediately went into previewing match three right after this.
Yeah, this was another good night from Jay and Ho-Ho. They had a very enjoyable performance over at the commentary table. I wrote about this in my review, but Doi missing the Bakatare sliding kick and then Ichikawa immediately going into a picture perfect Lamahi straw for a two count. What a fucking spot, man. Ichikawa always delivers and it's unbelievable.
He's the greatest comedy wrestler of all time. Like, it's so good to see like that happen. And we got to see a new title belt from Kenichiro Arai, but it's not a title belt. It's a banner that he brought out and was very proud of. They have no idea what it's from. Ho-Ho did not know what it was from either. So who knows what sleaze indie he got that title.
He didn't get the newest occupation of the indies DVD. It's a little bit behind right now.
They must not get Samurai in the Dojo. They must not get Samurai. Match 3, Ultimo Dragon, Misaki Mochizuki, and Problem Dragon versus Yasushi Kanda, Takashi Yoshida, and Punch Tomo Naga. Kind of felt like the middle matches that we saw at Osaka number 2. Mochizuki reversed the punch did his matrix evade, and then Mochizuki just picked him up and gave him a twister to win in 7 minutes and 39 seconds. I thought this was very paint by the numbers, but decent.
Look, I was blown away by Mochizuki in this match because you can obviously put him in a great match and you can see how great he is. But when you put him in there with scrubs, like who he was dealing with here, and you see him pull what I thought was a thrilling closing stretch between he and Punch Tomo Naga, you just got to take a step back and go, holy shit, this is one of the best guys to ever do it. I mean, he's really like, this is weirdly such an impressive Misaki Mochizuki match.
I mean, he pretty much carried it all. Like,
his match. It was a 1-on-3 match. It was Mochizuki against three dorks, and it was great.
You're being a little unfair there to Yasushi Kanda. He's not a dork. He's just a slime ball.
Oh, well, which would you rather be, a dork or a slime ball?
Oh, slime ball. Any day of the week. Any day of the week. I'd want to be a dirtbag. I am a dirtbag.
That's the thing. I'm a fucking dork and I'm sick of it. I had this thought a few weeks ago and I don't know what this means. I don't know how to act on this, but I just kept on having this thought when I was sitting in my apartment of like, what if I just started being mean? What if I got mean? And I don't know what that is. And I don't know what that looks like. I don't know how to execute this thought process, because this is a something that typically people who aren't very nice say, but I have taken stock of my life and I've determined I'm a very nice person and I'm sick of it. I am ready for something new. I'm ready to slick back the hair and put on the leather jacket and hit the jukebox. I want to start being mean, and maybe I do that by hanging out with Yasushi Kanda.
Yeah, I mean, Yasushi Kanda knows how to bury a body. Like, straight up, this is a guy that, yeah, if there's problems in your Japan, I'm calling up Yasushi Kanda. He'll take care of it. But
yeah, because if he can't do it, he definitely knows a guy that can do it.
Oh, he knows a guy. He most assuredly knows a guy.
Yasushi Kanda is the Webster's Dictionary definition of he knows a guy.
But at the same time, like, you see him on social media and he seems like so nice. But, you know, in the back of his head, it's like, this is a guy, you know, he knows a guy. So you just need to walk that. You just need to walk that tightrope. You need to be like Yasushi Kanda. That's what you should aspire to.
Look, I don't know how to do it, but I'm sick of this current incarnation of myself. So I got to try something new. And I think I'm just going to start shoulder checking people in the lockers whenever I see them.
I mean, you just got to go find a nerd to bully. Like that's what it is.
God, that's going to be hard to find a nerd, but I'll see what I can do.
Match 4 was the comeback match for Strong Machine J. He reactivated Strong Machine F and G, and they went up against the Natural Vibes team of Genki Horiguchi, UT, and Funky Jackie Kamei. J got the win with the machine suplex on Funky Jackie Kamei in 6 minutes and 3 seconds. And I thought, like, Strong Machine J looked great in this. He looks good. He didn't have, like, a shoulder sling on. He was doing things that you would not expect someone who coming back from that kind of surgery is doing. And UT. Like, we kind of dropped off on doing our MVPs of the week case, but UT has a very strong case to being the MVP of this week.
That's a very fair assessment, because every time I watch Strong Machine Jay, and I think for a while he was just so beaten down that he couldn't really showcase this, but he was able to do it here, where I forget he moves around as well as he does. You know, he's got that nice wheel kick, and he's able to keep up with this roster. I mean, yes, all of his matches have a distinct Strong Machine Jay feel to them, but he's still able to work with all of these guys here. You know, the faster guys like a Funky Jackie Kamei or a UT, he was able to work with them pretty well. I need to see what the next step for him is. It wouldn't shock me if he somehow ends up spending time teaming with the Ahashi brothers as they get more acclimated to the roster. I feel like that's probably the direction they're going with him. I'm not really interested in a rehash of Strong Machine F and Strong Machine G. I would like to see what's next for Strong Machine J, but I really have no idea what that is.
Well, he teased that there was like a new machine, or that there's going to be a change happening with the Machine Army. So maybe someone's going to be debuting as a machine. Maybe we might be seeing Strong Machine S, for example.
Yeah, I don't want that. I really like Sora Fuchikawa. I really like his face, and I would hate to see him put under that mask and that gimmick.
I mean, just imagine, like, if they do that, then they never have to reissue the state of emergency guidelines. Makes their life
Mike,
a whole lot easier.
Mike, I want people to break the state of emergency guidelines. I would love for more people to scream and shout on these shows. And Sora Fuchikawa, think about all the shit that's going on since March of 2020. And one of the guys who has elicited the strongest reactions, not only in Drengi, but in all of Japanese professional wrestling, has been Sora Fuchikawa, who has been gone, by the way, I believe at the day we're recording this, August 12th, I believe it's been exactly a year since Masaki Mochizuki obliterated his face. So he has been gone for a year now.
Yeah. And he should be coming back soon. So maybe he could break the COVID rules. The only time I've ever heard in the last 18 months of a company needing to remind people not to shout was because Tsuji Kondo was too mean to him.
Tremendous. I'm going to look back on the clap crowds as a pretty miserable time, but July through December of Drangate last year was a pretty special time, and I wish it would have happened in front of a normal audience, but I'm glad it exists in the way that it does, because that was a really fun run for this company.
It really stood out. Semi-main event, Shun Skywalker and Kota Minora of Masquerade versus R.E.D., Kai, and Diamante. There was a DQ as a ref attack as Diamante, just right in front of the referee, decided to pull the Bobby Hill special and then shove down the referee. And, you know, I thought this was a fun match until the finish.
Yeah, I was really high on this, and had we had a clean finish, I would have at the very least flirted with going 4 stars, because I was really into how violent Diamante and Kai were, how aggressive they were, slamming young boys onto Minoru and Skywalker on the floor, for example. I thought that was tremendous, but we end up with a non-finish. It's a bummer, but, you know, it's interesting. It seemed like we were going to get Diamante versus Ultimo coming out of Speedstar Final, and that seems to have been abandoned, or, you know, that wasn't the plan at all. We just read too much into that. Diamante versus Shun is not something I had spent a ton of time thinking about, but I would be okay with seeing those guys have a lot more interactions.
Yeah, Diamante. It's something like when someone was like asking like who's the most improved wrestler of 2021. And I still think it might be Diamante, because as good as he got in 2020, I feel like he's much better now. Like, he's so exciting to watch.
It has been 2 years in the promotion for him now. He came in August of 2019. Think about how better he has gotten in that 2-year run.
Oh, it's probably the biggest success story in the history of anyone coming in as a Gaijin in Dragon Gate.
At one point, we had thought of him as one of the worst imports they had ever brought in, really on that same level as like when at peak open the Global Gate obsession, when you had your B-Boys and your Human Tornadoes and whoever else. And those are wrestlers that I like. That's not a shot at them, but they weren't up to the Dragon Gate standard. it was like, man, Diamante is just not the guy. And the flip switched one day, and he has been terrific ever since. I now look forward to a lot of his matches.
And it's something that, like, I like the fact that he's paired off with Shun, because he's someone that, I mean, if he could base for La Estrella, he could also base for Shun Skywalker, and it's really kind of fantastic stuff. And Kai was nice and vicious in this as well. If there was a Summer Venture Tag League, I'm okay if a Kai and Diamante team, as long as we get like Mino Shun happening, because I enjoyed Minora and Shun Skywalker as well. I think that this was something that could have been, if it didn't have the finish it did, really could have trended really high. And then we got into the main event. It was the return of the 4-way 6-man tag. It was High Ends, Yamato, Dragon Kid Kagatora, Natural Vibes, KZ, Susumu Yokosuka, and King Shimizu. Masquerade, the Triangle Gate team of Jason Lee, Dragon Daya, and La Estrella, and the RED team of Kaido Ishida, SB Kento, and Hyo. The falls were SBK submitting Dragon Daya with the SB shooter in 19 minutes and 6 seconds after Daya Inferno's interference, and then Dragon Kid getting his eternal rival, Susumu Yokosuka. Dragon Kid has a lot of rivals, a lot of eternal rivals between Susumu, Kondo, and Kness. This is a guy who gets a lot of beefs, but he got him in 22 minutes and 53 seconds. And then Hyo got the win for RED. The big brain himself got the big win on the big stage in 25 minutes and 7 seconds after Kai ran in and laid out Yamato with the medial impact. But more importantly, Hyo won the match.
Yeah, Hyo pinned the Open the Dreamgate champion, which is that the second time he's done this year? No, because he beat Skywalker by count out, didn't he?
Right, yeah, because he ruined his King of Gate.
So at the very least, Hyo has two victories over the two Open the Dreamgate champions this year, which is mind-blowing to think about. Look, I wrote a lot about this in my Voices of Wrestling review. I would recommend reading my thoughts there. I was very impressed by the energy that everybody had in this match. I sing his praises constantly, but there's a reason that I do. I thought Jason Lee was just on another level in this match. This match had a ton of energy. Everybody played their part, but there was a noticeable change when Lee was in the ring as to just how snappy and how quick and how fluid things were. He is a marvelous professional wrestler. It's like him and Matt Sydal, I can always count on for them to play their part. Not every match is going to be great, but with Jason Lee and Matt Sydal, they bring that same calming energy where I know I am getting a world-class professional in the ring whenever they're in there. Shimizu was tremendous in this match. I thought SB Kento was great in this match. I loved everything up until the finish. It knocked it down a quarter star for me. Instead of 4.5, I'm at 4.25 because I don't need Kai running in a match like this, especially after he was just in a no contest in the prior match. It was a bummer that the last two matches on the show ended the way they did.
Yeah, yeah. My big takeaway for this match was this was King Shimizu's Feats of Strength Day, because that triple Samoan drop is one of the more insane things to consider. I mean, like, yeah, the combined weight of those guys probably is 500 pounds. So I'd imagine that Shimizu could squat that on a normal day, but just was like the way that they did it and the bounce doing that. It was just really a whole lot of fun. Yeah, the finish did come down for me. I went 4 flat on this, and it just was just like, it hit all the notes. It was a classic 4-way match. You had Hyo doing the big brain dance and him making Susumu doing it as well. We got Daya getting insanely high up in the air in a quadruple stump puller. And it was nice seeing, because this week was the first week we got to see everyone use the Bequeath Yoshino moves. And that was really nice to see all throughout. And, you know, the thing with some of these matches, sometimes they drag a little bit. This one didn't at all. And I thought that that was really kind of remarkable, all things considered. And it felt very vibrant. And that was something that, you know, on this show that was pretty underwhelmed by, it needed this match. And this match certainly delivered.
I completely co-sign all those takes. It was a very nice way to end a pretty lackluster Korakuen show.
Yep. Yeah. And that will be up on the network through the 18th. We do have two shows ahead of us, Case, this weekend. They are having their Across Fukuoka double shot. I had it pulled up a second ago because it's not on their Facebook page. It is on the 15th. The first show will be a 1300 Japanese standard time. That is 12 a.m. on the East Coast, 9 p.m. Pacific. Opening match, Shun Skywalker, Kota Minora versus King Shimizu and UT. Jason Lee and Dragon Daya versus Ryo Saito and Problem Dragon. 10-man tag team match. Ultimo Dragon, Naruki Doi, Masaki Mochizuki, Don Fuji, and Sachioko Voi versus the RED Fivesome of BB Hulk, Kaito Ishida, Kai, Diamante, and Hio. We have the return of Eita as he's been cleared from COVID, teaming with SB Kento versus Bensuke in the semi-main event of the afternoon show. In the main event, Yamato, Dragon Kid, and Kagatora versus KZ, Susumu Yokosuka, and Genki Horiguchi. Evening show, it is a 1700 Japanese Standard Time start, 4 a.m. for those on the East Coast, 1 a.m. for people in Pacific. Opening match, KZ, Susumu Yokosuka, UT versus Dragon Daya, or Dragon Kid, Kakatora, Keisuke Okuda, Ultimo Dragon and Sachioko Boy versus Don Fuji and Problem Dragon, Naruki Doi and Ryo Saito versus Genki Horiguchi and King Shimizu, semi-main event, Yamato, Benkei, and Masaki Mochizuki versus BB Hulk, Kai, and SB Kento. So we're getting a little bit of the Dreamgate scenario playing out there. And then the main event, they're going back to the well. It is Masquerade versus RED. It is Shun Skywalker, Kota Minoura, Jason Lee, and Dragon Daya versus Eita, Kaito Ishida, Diamante, and Hio. What are you looking forward to on these shows, Case?
It's hard for me to get excited about Okuda and Benkei versus Eita and SB Kento just because you and I both know that is ending in a no contest, but I do love the sound of that on paper, so my eyes go there. And then obviously, main event of the night show, Masquerade versus RED, some heavy hitters in that matchup. That should be a great match.
Yeah, it's something where I'm building up my expectations for a Cross Fukuoka showcase. I do this every time, but that match just the match has not missed, and I don't think it's going to miss. And I'm excited to see how they're going to kind of play up the Dreamgate scenario in that same event. The match on the opening show that I'm really stoked for is that opener. Minho Shun versus King Shimizu and UT. Like, those are, you have Shimizu and UT, who are my two blowaway guys from this week, going up against Shun Skywalker and Kota Minoura, who have incredible chemistry. So I think there's going to be a lot of interesting stuff there, and we'll talk about that next week on Open the Voice Gate. Case, anything else you want to say before we get out of here?
Yeah, unfortunately, I do want to end on a bit of a bummer, but this broke as we were recording. Chris Hero tweeted out that the man we know as Real Hero, Jamal Hepburn, passed away over the weekend, and we would be remiss if we didn't say anything. I mean, Jamal, Real Hero, was the gateway for so many people. I mean, it for newer Dragon Gate fans, if you came on like during the network era, it is hard to explain in words just how valuable Jamal was, because he was the guy that not only had all of the Dragon Gate footage, but he had all of the All Japan footage, all of the NOAH footage, all of the Big Japan footage, all the DDT footage, all the 01 footage. He is unfortunately leaving a hole in this community that I don't know how it's going to be filled, because he was a one in a million type of person who had seemingly dedicated his life to making Japanese wrestling more accessible. And it is a devastating loss for the community, and a devastating loss for his family and his friends. And it is awful to read that. And, you know, this podcast, or I guess I should say rather the Western coverage of Dragon Gate, would not be the same without him. So it is a terrible loss and something that I'm very sad to read.
Yeah, and it's something that's hard to impart how, and we talked a little bit about this in the DGUSA series, just how difficult it would be for people to keep up with these Japanese promotions before the streaming networks. And if you're someone that was not clued into tape trading, just because of what Jamal was able to do along with Ditch, being able to like be a repository and archivist and as someone who works in archiving and preservation, it's something that I find very encouraging, the fact that people were willing to do it. And it's an immeasurable hole, I feel like, within a Western fandom for just Japanese wrestling to begin with, because there would not really be the amount of interest going towards like the Ustream eras and Nico Nico and then to the Dragon Gate Network if it weren't for people like Jamal doing the hard work, like trying to figure out where to upload things, how to just propagate these promotions, and always being able to kind of, like, the insane thing about it was, like, within, it used to be like weeks or months to get shows before Real Hero really started. And then it was something that was like soon right after airing. Like, it was really kind of remarkable, and he will be dearly missed.
Yeah, that is unfortunately a somber way to end the show, but I saw that break during the show and I had to bring it up here. I think the Burning Spirits account, which I believe is run by Kevin Hare of Voices of Wrestling, I think he sums it up perfectly. He says, rest in peace, Real Hero, hugely important to the community, but more importantly, he was a nice guy, and those sentiments are ringing out from everybody on my Twitter feed right now. So rest in peace to Real Hero. Thank you for everything you gave the community over the past few years. And that is all I have for this week on Open the Voice Gate.
Yep, and that will do it. You can follow the podcast at Open the Voice Gate. You can follow Case _ in your case. And you can follow me at Fujiheya. We'll be back next week talking about the Across Fukuoka shows on Open the Voice Gate. Take care.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.